Arif Dean, Mile High Sports, Hockey Mountain High, your go-to Avalanche podcast, returns after nearly a month, and so much has changed. My God, so much has changed. Starting with the reason for the absence, you can probably hear a little bit of it in my voice, but the congestion is finally starting to subside. It's been a rough couple of weeks here, and I think it took up until that game on Saturday where I watched Cale Makar, you know, rush the puck, play 25-plus minutes or whatever the hell it was, and then rush the puck up the ice with this long pass to Nathan MacKinnon, who skates it to his stick, to centers it to Lekkonen, who's there to score it right down the center, as Mark Rycroft put it, and beat the Edmonton Oilers with what I think was 0.5 seconds on the clock, later became 1.4, whatever the hell it was with a second left. And then all the players get together and they're all celebrating, and you see Cale Makar just kind of coughing his life out. He was sick. He had an illness. He was a game time decision. Ended up toughing it out, and you see him just kind of disappear from the celebration circle, and he just skates away to the bench to go gather himself. And I said, yep, that's the difference between a pro athlete and somebody like me, because my cough and my congestion has kept me from doing this for a very long time. And what a damn shame, because the time of the year it came in was trades galore, first of all. I believe on my last episode that I did back about a month ago now, almost a month ago, I would say, almost 4 weeks ago, there was a moment in the podcast where I was looking at the line combinations, and I was talking about how the Avalanche needed to do pretty much exactly what they did at the trade deadline: get a second line center and shore up the depth. I've been beating this drum for months now on this show, when I was with Gorilla Sports, with Jesse and JJ on their podcast, that the Avalanche needed more than just a second line center. They needed a fourth line center. They went out and got one in Yakov Trenin, who him and Cogliano seem like they're going to split the duties there. But the big thing for me was they need depth. They need a second line center. It's a clear hole in the lineup, and they need depth. And they went out and got exactly both of those things. They replaced Bowen Byram with somebody who fits better. And before all those trades went down, and when I was talking about what the Avalanche need, I believe there was a part in the show that I last did where I read the depth. I read the line combinations, and obviously at the time, Ryan Johansson's your second line center. Parisi was playing with him. I think Lekkonen had just returned. Nichushkin was still not back. And I read through the lineups, and I got to the very end, and I read the fourth line, and I paused, and I stared at the screen as I looked at these brutal bottom nine players, this weird mishmash of guys, and I uttered the words, "What the fuck is that?" And now, you look at a bottom nine, now that Nichushkin's been elevated, with Drouin and Lekkonen playing with Casey Mittelstadt, Zach Parise playing with Wood and Colton, Yakov Trenin with Cogliano and Brandon Duhaime, obviously Logan O'Connor now, we've learned, unfortunately, is done for the year. And I don't utter the words, "What the fuck is that?" I utter the words, "What the fuck is that? How did the Avalanche do this?" And it's all thanks to Chris McFarland's roster construction, because we're going to get into every single one of the trades here. It's been a while. I got to catch up on a lot. Forgive my swearing, but of course, I've been doing this for 4 years. I hope you don't take offense to it. Chris McFarland looked at the naysayers. He looked at all the people that were doubting his ability. He looked at the people that thought he was crazy for only bringing in Lars Eller a year ago, in a year where the Avalanche just, let's face it, didn't have it. And he went out and he got Casey Mittelstadt for Bowen Byram, a mind-boggling NHL trade, in my opinion, one of the biggest trades the NHL has seen in terms of a hockey trade since Weber for Subban. He goes out and obviously Holland Larson the same day, which was just a crazy-ass trade for Edmonton. Terrible trade. He goes out and brings in Sean Walker in a deal where he did what he was trying to do with Chris Tanev, and he took Ryan Johansson, packaged him with a first rounder, and brought in a right shot defenseman. And Sean Walker's fit real well. I can't wait till the offseason when we talk about how I think the Avalanche are going to fit him in, and it might cost you Josh Manson, but we'll get to that in July after hopefully another Stanley Cup for the Avs. And then he goes out on the second day. He's still cooking. The water was boiling and he was still cooking. Brings in Brandon Duhaime. And then for some reason signs Jeremy Hansel and trades him in a deal for Yakov Trenin. Shores the hell up out of the bottom six. Suddenly you got these four new guys. And this obviously comes about a month or so after the signing and the addition and the debut of Zach Parise, who ultimately replaced Tomas Tatar, who was sent out the door pretty damn quick after he was signed here. And suddenly the Avalanche have what they needed. They have depth. They have role players. They have guys that slot into positions where they should be playing. And it's all come together real well. The Ryan Johansson experiment, as we know, didn't work out. And there's a lot to uncover there. I think the biggest thing for me there is that, you know, they had to, I kind of had a little bit of a thing in me that said maybe they just find a way to let him be the fourth line center for the playoff run because they're not going to find a way to get rid of him. And then I stopped and I said, there's no way. There's no way this team's going to let Ryan Johansson enter the postseason on the roster knowing very well that he doesn't mesh. I know there's been a lot of talk about friction in the dressing room, and you know, I was part of that because I referenced when I wrote my article about the trade and about how Chris McFarland hit it out of the park, the Walker and the Mittelstadt deals, the first day of trades. I referenced the game against the Vancouver Canucks about a month ago where Ryan Johansson had two goals and the Avalanche beat the Canucks 3-2. It was a big game for them. And I'm talking about the one at Ball Arena, not the most recent one where they erased a 3-goal deficit. Man, the Canucks are getting their asses handed to them by the Avs this year. And I was referencing that game, and I referenced how at the end of the game, we went into the dressing room to talk to Ryan Johansson, and he genuinely felt uncomfortable. He had this, it was a very, very tough presser because we all walked away from it kind of with this thought of like, it was kind of with this thought that like, this guy was looking at us like, I've read what you've written. I know what you guys think of me. I've been a shadow. I've been kind of a ghost in this dressing room for months where nobody wants to talk to Ryan Johansson, who, by the way, like just salt of the earth kind of guy. You walk in, he's the first one to say hello. He's the first one to say hi, to ask you about your day, to media, which, you know, is a very minor thing. I'm not saying that's why you got to vouch for the guy. But despite all that, we all knew it wasn't working, him included. And then suddenly he has this game where he has these two goals, his first two goals in God knows how long. And the Avalanche win a big game and everybody wanted to speak with him. And you can just tell there was an uncomfortability for Ryan Johansson to be there in that moment. And you just knew he had to not be there anymore. There's obviously been a lot of talk about friction with other players. I cannot confirm nor deny that. You know, it's not something that I see on a daily basis. But I can say that someone like Nathan MacKinnon does not take losing easily. He's not a fan of playing with guys like Ryan Johansson because you know that Nathan MacKinnon is the kind of guy that expects full effort all the time. And Ryan Johansson, it's not that he wasn't putting in the effort. His career is past him. I know he's had a little bit of struggles with that stuff in the past, the carelessness, and people have written about it. People have spoken about it. It's not something I can echo because I didn't see Ryan Johansson at his prime with more to give than what he offered. I saw Ryan Johansson, a guy that moving up and down the dressing room. When I tell you guys, this man walked like a 50-year-old in a 30-year-old's body, like the way he moves up and down the dressing room when he takes off his skates and he's down to just his, you know, the sweats or whatever the hell he wears. They're not really like spandex tights or anything. They're just the sweats that he wears under his hockey gear and the long sleeve shirt he wears under his shoulder pads and everything. The guy moved slow. He was a painful 31, 32 years old. So I kind of question what the Avalanche were expecting when they got him. But I will say at the same time, it was a very admirable, opportunity or not an opportunity, but an attempt at filling a second line center hole the way that they did this summer. It was a unique way to try to approach it. Didn't work. So what did Chris McFarland do? He crumpled it up, stuck a first round draft pick to it, and brought in a guy in Sean Walker. So let's move on to Ryan Johansson. Let's move to Bowen Byram. I've been saying this for years. Bowen Byram's not long for the Avalanche. And I've said it many times on this podcast. And I'm not trying to toot my own horn and say that I predicted all these moves. I almost did. if I used the words Casey Mittelstadt instead of Joel Eriksson Ek when I was putting together this Bowen Byram trade idea. But there's one thing that has stuck out with me since the 2022 Cup Final that I have not gone away from. At the time when the Avalanche won the Stanley Cup, it was very clear that Bowen Byram was a rising star. And there was a part of the national media from Alberta who had said to me post-game when we were hanging out, there was this big bar that all the reporters went to. I'm talking, I walked into this bar and the first two faces I saw were Chris Chelios and Mark Messier. And then there was Kevin Bieksa and Kevin Weeks and the Pierre LeBrun and Chris Johnston. Everybody was there. Jennifer Botterill. It was a hockey heaven at this bar in Tampa Bay moments after the Avs won the Cup. Or maybe let's say like 2 hours after the Avs won the Cup. And one of these national media guys, national media members, had said to me, Bowen Byram knows he's not playing on the Avalanche forever. And I said, why not? And he said, because Bowen Byram knows, and for that matter, he also said, the Avalanche know Bowen Byram's not there for long. Because they all know Bo needs to be a number one somewhere. Bo needs to get the minutes, the opportunity, and the level of confidence in him as the number one guy that he's never going to get in Denver because of Cale Makar ahead of him. There are not a lot of teams that have a guy like Cale ahead of Bo, but there is no way in hell, nothing Bo can do to take over Cale Makar's spot for the next decade as the number one power play guy, the number one power play minute muncher, the number one top pair defenseman who plays in all situations and leads the team. You know, this is moments after Cale Makar won the Conn Smythe Trophy. So it was obvious that at some point, Bo was going to need to go, and probably soon before he signs a long-term high-money deal. This was summer of 2022, and that had stuck with me since. I figured it would take about a year or two or three, and here we are, less than 2 years, Bowen Byram's out the door. Now, people had said, why didn't they just trade Sam Girard and keep Bo? He was signed for cheaper. And my response to that is simple. Sam Girard is locked up long-term at $5 million. As a guy who slots comfortably as a number 3-4. Bowen Byram is locked up for one more year at $3.85 million. Bowen Byram wants to make a lot more money than he's making right now, and Bowen Byram is going to get that, whether it's with Buffalo or whether Buffalo trades him to a team that gives him that deal. Fact of the matter is, it wasn't going to be with the Avalanche. The Devon Taves contract put an end to that. We thought when Bowen was drafted, it was going to be Bowen, Cale, top pair forever. But then this Devon Taves guy comes out of nowhere and even takes over that slot. And it reminds me very much of the Nashville Predators, where they had Shea Weber, which they eventually traded for PK Subban, sure. They had Ryan Suter, who eventually obviously walked, sure. Actually, no, Ryan Suter doesn't count because that happened before. Scratch Ryan Suter. They had Shea Weber, who they eventually traded for Subban. They had Matthias Ekholm, Ryan Ellis. They had a lot of blue liners. And then they draft this guy who slots in as their number 4-5 named Seth Jones, who, if you guys remember, longtime Avalanche fans, there was a conversation between taking Seth Jones over Nathan MacKinnon at the time, which Patrick Waugh quickly poo-pooed and said, we're taking MacKinnon. Perfect decision. Right decision by Joe and Patty at the time. But Seth Jones was that level. Coincidentally, also drafted number 4 like Bowen Byram. So this guy falls into the Nashville Predators' lap. They've got way too many guys ahead of him for him to ever see his real potential in Nashville. And they needed a center. So coincidentally, they go out and trade him 1-for-1 for a center who coincidentally was, at the time, a young, up-and-coming, rising star in Ryan Johansson. So the Avalanche took Bowen Byram. They did what I was saying for months, trade him for a second-line center. I had kept saying Joel Eriksson Ek, but that guy just was playing out of his mind. He's reached a level where his value was much higher than Bo's. So they shipped Bowen Byram to Buffalo for Casey Mittelstadt. In that deal, they filled the slot that was left behind by Ryan Johansson, the second-line center spot, which Johansson was barely even playing in. But in the Ryan Johansson deal, they filled the Bowen Byram spot because on the third pair, the Avalanche had two lefties in Bo Byram and Jack Johnson. And they go out and get this guy, Sean Walker, who reminds me a lot of when the Avalanche brought in Devon Taves, in the sense of this is a guy that's been having a coming out party closer to 30 than to 20. Is he going to be the next Devon Taves? I'm not saying that. Maybe. We'll see. But he slots in much better than Bowen Byram in the position he's playing in. And that's to say, is Sean Walker going to have a better career than Bowen Byram? Probably not. Obviously, you can't predict. Never say never. But no. I think Bowen Byram's the kind of guy that in 5-10 years from now, you're going to see constantly making the Team Canada roster. He's going to be constantly in the Norris Trophy conversation. I don't think you can say that about Sean Walker. However, this year, at the level of play Sean Walker's playing, at the role that he will slot in, and we have seen him slot into with Jack Johnson, with the minutes that expected of him and the PK prowess that he brings to this team, a team that hasn't let in a power play goal since he's been here, he fits in that role with Jack Johnson. He fits the 2023-24 Colorado Avalanche much better than Bowen Byram ever did. That doesn't mean Walker's a better defenseman. He's a better fit right now. So the Avalanche make these two moves on the first day, obviously. They bring in Duhaime and Trenin, and I remember when those two moves came in on the second day, on that Thursday before the trade deadline, where a lot of us media members were talking, and we're like, where are they going to slot all these guys? Lo and behold, we find out a few days later that Logan O'Connor's season is over. But let's kind of talk about this roster construction. Let's talk about the way Chris McFarland navigated the trade deadline. Yes, he traded the 2025 first. He's also already traded the 2025 second for Lars Eller, a move that was made out of desperation a year ago. But he looked at the trade deadline the Avalanche had in 2022, which is the last time you can say they genuinely looked like a team primed to make a cup run just like 2024. The difference is 2022 didn't need fixing. It needed a little bit of a tune-up. 2024 needed a tune-up and to be fixed. So he did something similar to what he did in 2024. He dumped a guy to make roster, to make cap space. This year, he did it with Tomas Tatar early in the year. He replaced him with Zach Parise and saves $600,000-$700,000 that way, whatever it was. But then he trades out Curtis McDermott. And that's when you knew at that moment, that's when I knew, a week before the deadline, 5 days before all the first set of deals broke down with the Johansson and the Byram deals, that's when I knew Chris McFarland was getting ready to have a deadline. When he sent out Curtis McDermott and freed up that extra million. That changed a lot. So, and this is a cap where, you know, as you've seen at the top with all the teams at the top of the cap right now, every penny matters. Every penny counts. So shifting Tatar at $1.5 million for someone like Parise at $800,000, big for the cap. Shifting out Curtis McDermott, adding in $0 back, not retaining any of his salary, also big for the salary cap. So the Avalanche clear out that space. That reminds me in 2022 of when they shipped out Tyson Jost and brought in Nico Sturm. Saved a lot of money there. Obviously replaced Tyson Jost. They didn't just ship him out. But then you look at all the other additions that Chris McFarland made, and it's very reminiscent of that 2022 trade deadline. In 2022, they added a top six forward named Arturi Lehkonen. In 2024, they added a top six forward named Casey Mittelstadt. In 2022, they added a right shot defenseman to slot in on the second and third pair named Josh Manson. In 2024, they added a right shot defenseman to slot in on the second and third pair named Sean Walker. In 2022, they added two depth forwards, energy guys, guys you could see healthy scratched, but guys you could also see scoring a big goal. Or in their situation, in their case, combining for a big game tying goal in the third period in Tampa Bay in game four to set up the miraculous, amazing Nazem Kadri overtime winner. And of course, I'm talking about a center in Nico Sturm and a winger in Andrew Cogliano. Fast forward to 2024, they bring in two energy guys, guys you could see healthy scratched at one point or another, not that they will be, but guys that you can also see combining to score a big goal in 2024. And that is, of course, the center slash winger, Yakov Trenin, and one Brandon Duhaime as a winger. So they pretty much brought in the same thing they brought in 2022. They got a top six forward, a very reliable right shot defenseman, and two depth forwards to shore up the depth, the bottom six. It's a money trade deadline for Chris McFarland. My guy was cooking. He cooked. The early returns show that he knew exactly what he was doing. We spoke with him twice. He made a lot of comments about how Jared Bednar likes to have a bottom six more than he likes to have a third and a fourth line. And I know exactly what he means now, because right now you got Wood, Colton, and Parisi. You got Trennan, Duhaime, and Cogliano. On any given night, any one of those guys could play more minutes than the other. There is no clear third line on that. Ross Colton makes $4 million. You want him to be a consistent third liner. But Ross Colton played 9 minutes against the Edmonton Oilers. Trennan has played a lot of minutes. Duhaime, we saw him play big minutes with Trennan and Mittelstadt on that line when the Avalanche were still kind of playing with a shortened roster in that first game against the Vancouver Canucks. So this is before, obviously, a couple guys made it back to the lineup, like Parisi and a sick, I think it was Lekkonen was out with an illness, and you get the point. Drouin was out lower body, so on and so forth. So they add these guys. The returns are pretty damn good so far. And you're looking at an Avalanche roster now where, let's look at just the forwards. Let's look at just three of the four guys. Trennan, Duhaime, and Walker. And then Valeri Nichushkin comes back. In itself is a massive bit of news that I've missed since the last time I did this podcast. And those four names make up four of the top 10 guys that have played the most PK minutes since they debuted, which is the same night Nichushkin returned, Friday, March 8th against the Minnesota Wild. The Avs have played five games since then. They've won all five games. They're a perfect 14 for 14 on the PK. And in that time, the most time on ice on the PK belongs to Devon Taves. Second place, Yakov Trennan. Third place, Andrew Cogliano. Fourth place, Sean Walker. So Trennan and Walker, out of the 22 minutes the Avalanche have been shorthanded, Trennan has played half of it, and Walker has played a little less than half. Nichushkin, 729. Brandon Duhaime, 717. Those four guys are among the top 10 in ice time for the perfect PK. So Chris McFarland goes out and brings in these guys. Suddenly the Avalanche have two lines. They have a top line. They have a second line. And then they have the bottom six. Suddenly the Avalanche have a lot of PK options, making up for the very big and hard to fill absence of Logan O'Connor, who is having an exceptional season. Man, feel for that guy. And suddenly they have two solid power play units. And suddenly, like we just saw, something I wrote about on Tuesday, they are now winning on the road. The Avalanche go 4-0 on the road trip. They beat the Calgary Flames, thanks to Eustace Annan in goal. The very next night, they beat the Vancouver Canucks behind Alexander Georgiev. They get 3 nights between games. They come out, beat the Edmonton Oilers in the most exciting game I've watched all season. They get another 3 nights. They come out and beat the St. Louis Blues, again with Annan in goal after Georgiev played in Edmonton. Both of the goalies played twice. Suddenly, Eustace Annan has kind of shifted into a guy that you can trust. Ever since that 6-game road trip to start the post-All-Star break stretch, where the Avalanche were 1-4-1 and just played terrible hockey back then, Eustace is a 931 and Georgiev's a 923. They've got goaltending now. And Georgiev has played really well. Eustace has filled in more than admirably. I think they did the right thing by giving the job to Annan after the All-Star break. I think they did the right thing by giving him as much of a leash as possible to say, take this position before we go out and waste another draft pick on a veteran we probably don't want. And Annan stepped up, because now suddenly you're looking at a goalie where I've compared him to Joseph Woll before in the past. I did it over the offseason after seeing Joe Woll step in for the Leafs last year. And now suddenly you have a guy you can trust, and that is big for the Colorado Avalanche. So they suddenly have goaltending, and like I wrote about on Tuesday, which is what I was going to say about a minute ago, now they're winning on the road. And why are they winning on the road? Because of these traits. Because on the road, and this is something I wrote about on milehighsports.com. You can go and click on it. But the road team isn't often set up for success. The road team is the team that has to ice their lineup first. The home team is the coach and is the team that can line match. They're the ones that can throw out who they want against your top guys. There's a reason why in 2022, the Avalanche used to shift the lineup. They would play at home Nichushkin and Landeskog with Nathan MacKinnon. But when they go to Tampa Bay, they put Lehkonen and Rantanen with Nathan MacKinnon. And that was to counteract what they knew John Cooper was going to do with the line matching, where he was going to use the Cirelli line, where he was going to use the point line, where he was going to use Nick Paul and Brandon Hagel, and how he's going to shut down X amount of guys. So he was shifting them the way they played. Nichushkin and Landeskog in Tampa were playing with Kadri, or JT Compher before Kadri came back. And in Denver, Nichushkin and Landeskog were playing with Nathan MacKinnon. So the Avalanche, that's a coach that was playing chess in 2022, who in 2024 didn't have nearly that kind of option. Because he had a top line that consisted of Nathan MacKinnon, Mikko Rantanen, and insert player name here. Whether it was Arturi Lehkonen before he broke his neck or after he broke his neck and came back, whether it was Jonathan Drouin, whether it was Val Nichushkin tearing it up until January, or Val Nichushkin disappearing for 2 months in the NHLPA player assistance program, or Val Nichushkin coming back and taking over again. It was a lot of guys. But the common themes have been Nathan MacKinnon and Mikko Rantanen, who haven't missed games yet this season, on that top line. That line was the first and the only issue for any home team coach when the Avalanche were on the road, to say, I'm going to match up my best shutdown guys, or maybe even two lines, consistently taking turns going up against Nathan MacKinnon. And all the other lines, no biggie. Wood, Colton, O'Connor, Parisi, whoever the hell, doesn't matter. We'll throw out who we can against these guys and we'll probably win. Because if Wood and Colton were playing against top six competition, because the Ryan Johansson line was not good enough. Well, Ryan Johansson specifically, and then obviously it didn't help that he never had the wingers either. So these moves have given the Avalanche the ability to roll four lines, to have a top six, to help Jared Bednar have the options to try to counteract any other coach who's line matching against him, to shut down Nathan MacKinnon on the road to try to win a hockey game. And lo and behold, the first four road games the Avalanche get with all these guys and Val Nichushkin coming back, and they're 4-0. And I just think it's an exceptional bit of work. The theme here is Chris McFarland did his job exceptionally well over these last couple weeks. And I could not be happier for the guy to kind of shut down the naysayers, me included. I was starting to have a little bit of like, all right, something's a little fishy here with McFarland. Not anymore. He fixed the problem that he made himself with Ryan Johansson. Yes, did it cost you a first-round draft pick? Yeah, but you also got Sean Walker, and that's a piece that in 2 months from now, 3 months from now, I should say, you might have another Stanley Cup, and a big part of it might be because of this guy. Now, I also want to spend a little bit of time to speak about Nikolai Kovalenko, who, as you guys know, is now in Loveland with the Eagles. Landed in Denver after his season ended with the Torpedo in the KHL in the first round of the playoffs. He's here in Denver now. He goes up to Loveland. He gets sent down there to rehab the injury that he suffered in that final game in the KHL. No word yet on when he'll be back, but I'm recording this podcast Wednesday night. In about 13, 14 hours from now, the Avalanche are going to take the ice for practice. We will definitely ask Jared Bednar about it, and I'm excited to see what he says. So there's another depth option. And that doesn't even include the fact that Joel Kiviranta, Freddie Olofsson, and Chris Wagner are all respectable, viable options when injuries arise. So now you got four players. Olofsson, Wagner, Kiviranta, and Kovalenko as options to put up front after the top 12. And then obviously there's the wild card for Gabe Landeskog, second round, third round, Stanley Cup final, when hell freezes over, who knows. So the Avalanche have depth. Outside of Kovalenko, I also do want to talk about how the Avalanche suddenly are once again the highest scoring team in the NHL. The defense has been playing better as of late. Cale Makar still kind of feeling it, but hopefully his game will reach the Cale Makar level that we know and love. The goaltending is doing its thing, and they're doing this while the team is scoring a lot of goals. Tops in the NHL in goals. Tops in the NHL in goals per game. It is the best offense in the league. We've seen Sean Walker score twice for this team already. We've seen Casey Mittelstadt score twice. I'm honestly surprised at this point. I'm shocked that Duhaime and Trenin haven't scored yet because they've looked so damn good. And they've had a positive impact on nearly every game they've played since they've been here. And I'm really excited to see those guys get the love that they deserve at Ball Arena for this upcoming 5-game homestand. So I'm going to put an end to the podcast here. Hope you guys enjoyed it. I promise you the consistency will be back. It has been a rough month getting through this podcast. I've had to stop the show a couple times to have a little bit of a cough attack. I hope I remember to catch all of them at post-production because that would sound terribly bad if not. But I'm excited for the season, guys. I'm excited to see. Like, I was scrolling through my photo gallery on my phone, my camera roll, and I was trying to find something from early last season because if you guys remember, the first game of the playoffs last year was the first time the Avalanche had their entire healthy lineup. Darren Helm was coming back, Josh Manson, everybody like that. And I was trying to look for a picture from back then to like look at something. And I saw a picture in the dressing room that I had on my phone. It was Bo Byram at his locker stall next to Brad Hunt, next to Ben Myers. And far in the distance on the other side, you can see Dennis Malgin. And I look at that, and I look at the Avalanche going into their first round of the playoffs with Dennis Malgin, Ben Myers, and Brad Hunt. And obviously, Bowen Byram's a very, very viable player. He's not part of the same category. And I look at Hunt, and I look at Malgin, and I look at Myers, who obviously was shipped off to Anaheim to reunite with Greg Cronin. And then I compare that to the fact that the Avalanche's fourth line now has Duhaime, Trenin, and Cogliano, or a mixture of them three and Miles Wood and Zach Parise. And then I look at how there are still four guys that I mentioned in Kiviranta, Wagner, Olofsson, and Kovalenko as the scratches that can come into the lineup as forwards. And I look at Myers, Malgin, and Hunt, and I say, what a difference a year makes. I am genuinely excited to see where this Avalanche roster can go because I think they can go far. And I think this year might be that rebound year that the Avalanche have after a tough 2023. Is it going to be as easy as it was in 2022? Absolutely not. The West is looking like a freaking pressure cooker of teams just fighting. I don't know what the hell I'm trying to say here, but just eight really good teams. Nashville Predators haven't won in God knows how long. I think since before the last time I did a podcast, which is crazy in regulation, that is 11-0-2 or 12-0-2 in their last 14. It's going to go right down to the wire. I'm excited to see the playoff race shake out. I'm excited for postseason hockey, and I'm excited to see this new version of the Colorado Avalanche give all they've got heading into the playoffs. And I'm excited for all of you to follow along with me here on Hockey Mountain High, your go-to Avalanche podcast. I promise to you, I'm going to bring these shows more consistently again. I'm going to fight through this sickness. I'm not going to say like Cale Makar did, because I am not comparing myself to Cale Makar, because that's not something I'm ready to do. Don't think so. So with that being said, if you made it this far in the podcast, bless your pretty little heart. Let's make hockey for everyone. And we out you.